This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, December 13th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll hear how hydrogen powers a family's car and home, and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. A defense attorney for Amanda Hamm says he'll appeal her conviction on child endangerment charges in the drowning deaths of her three children in Clinton Lake. Attorney Steve Skelton says he was pleased with the ruling, but disappointed Hamm was not acquitted on all charges. Hamm could have been convicted of first-degree murder, but the jury opted for the lesser charge. Skelton says the verdict means the jury decided Hamm did not help plan murders, but should have known her former boyfriend was a threat to her children. That man, Maurice Legrone Jr., was convicted of murder in April. Craig Brown is the father of one of the children who drowned in September 2003. Brown says the verdict would make it difficult for the family to find closure. The Macon County jury did not take questions from reporters, but did issue a statement. It said the verdict in Hamm's case was based on the evidence and, quote, very, very careful deliberations. The jury deliberated 27 hours over 5 days before reaching the verdict. Champaign City Council members last night approved a hike in the township tax levy that went as far as tax caps would allow, and they agreed to hold a discussion later on other ways to help restore coming cuts in township assistance. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Township Supervisor Linda Abernathy says those cuts will reduce by some 60%, both the number of people receiving aid and the amount of money they get. She says she'll have the reductions in place by January or February.
I will be consulting and struggling and figuring it out over the next week or so, because I will have to give time to our clients in the form of notice. And if I'm getting ready to slash 60% of them, that's a big notice.
Champaign spending on township general assistance increased sharply under Abernathy, who says her predecessor discouraged people from applying for aid. Voters last month rejected a township tax hike that would have paid for the increased service. The Champaign City Council will discuss ways to restore township aid cuts in a study session expected in February or March. But several council members said they want to explore alternatives to simply giving money to the township from the city's budget. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
In other action, Champaign City Council members gave preliminary approval to supporting the downtown M2 project with tax incentives and a new city parking deck. Developers hope to break ground in March on a $30 million 10-story building across Neal from their earlier project, the One Main Building. About 300 University of Illinois employees will vote next month on their first contract agreement with the U of I. Just over a year ago, visiting academic professionals chose a collective bargaining agent. Yesterday, the visiting academic professionals group came to terms on a tentative deal. Union bargainer Alan Bilansky says VAPs didn't receive a pay raise in August because of the slow pace of negotiations, but they'll now get the raise retroactive to the start of the school year.
I think part of the reason that it took so long is just because we hadn't had a contract before, so we were pretty much starting from zero. So we had to sort of feel out what the contract would look like.
Visiting academic professionals work a wide range of jobs on the Urbana campus. They usually have contracts of a year or less. Bilansky won't say much more about the three-year deal, which will be the subject of union informational meetings before the January ratification vote. Preliminary results from yearly achievement tests yield some good news for Champaign and Urbana school administrators, but there are some areas of concern for them to address. The initial results from the Illinois State Achievement Test revealed that every Urbana elementary and middle school but one, Prairie Elementary, met or exceeded that standard set for schools under the federal No Child Left Behind Act. Urbana District 116's Deputy Superintendent Preston Williams says teachers were already working with students at Prairie, which has a high rate of student turnover because families enter and leave the district.
We have been working at strengthening those areas with our staff and the students through a number of different efforts, including bringing in another literacy program, some after-school programs that we had there as well, along with some initiatives on the weekends as well as the mornings.
Champaign Unit 4 saw all of its elementary and middle schools make adequate yearly progress. Spokeswoman Beth Shepherd says administrators were especially pleased with marked increases in math scores among African-American students in some schools. Full results are due out next month. In March, students take the next round of tests. A monthly magazine ranks the University of Illinois' Urbana campus as one of the most wired in the nation. The survey from PC Magazine, which ranked college campuses based on their computing and technology resources for the general student body, those working on technology-related degrees, and for the public. The U of I ranked 8th on the top 20 list, which is to be released later this month in the January issue. The honor of Most Wired Campus went to Villanova University near Philadelphia. Indiana University of Bloomington ranked 3rd. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Many homeowners have reduced their fossil fuel consumption by placing solar panels on their rooftops. But one man has gone to a whole new level. He's created a homemade power plant that runs on solar power and hydrogen fuel cells. The Environment Report's Brad Linder reports.
Mike Stritsky's been tinkering with cars his whole life. Over time, the 49-year-old engineer became convinced that hydrogen fuel cells were the future of the auto industry. But during his 16 years with the New Jersey Department of Transportation, Stritsky saw that there was a problem with fuel cell cars. Nobody was really building them.
You had the automakers and you had government pointing fingers. Well, you know, you build the fuel cell cars first and then we'll provide the infrastructure. And then they said, well, you provide the infrastructure and we'll build the fuel cell cars. And I got tired of hearing that argument. And I said, well, one way to solve the problem is to make your infrastructure your home.
5 years and $500,000 later, Stritsky's achieved his dream. Here's how it works. Stritsky's garage is covered with solar panels. They provide electricity for his house, and when there's extra power, it's routed to a device called an electrolyzer, which breaks down water into hydrogen and oxygen. During the summer, the hydrogen is stored in fuel tanks on Stritsky's property, and in the winter, he runs the hydrogen through a 6-kilowatt fuel cell to make energy. Stritsky, his wife, and 3 children are the first family in the country to live in a house powered entirely by hydrogen fuel cells and solar power. And there's another benefit. Stritsky can fuel up his hydrogen fuel cell vehicles at a gas pump near his garage.
The fuel cells have enough to run the vehicle at about 50 miles an hour on fuel cells alone. If you're going faster than that, you're sipping off of the battery pack at a very low rate.
Stritsky helped design this car for Rutgers University 7 years ago. It's been running ever since. Now that he has a fueling station at his home, he plans to convert his other car, a Toyota Prius, to run on hydrogen as well. Stritsky pulls up to the hydrogen fueling station, a series of converted propane tanks out by his garage. Opening his car's trunk, Stritsky connects a hose from one of those tanks to a smaller tank inside the car.
That's how it refuels.
Stritsky's system runs like a well-oiled machine, only without the oil. But it wasn't always so simple. When he first decided to build his home power plant, Stritsky sought government approval from his hometown of East Amwell, New Jersey.
I said, all right, I'm doing this like anybody else is getting a building permit. I walked into the town, and I said, here, I want to build a solar hydrogen fuel cell home. And, the first place I went was the zoning officer, and he basically told me it's an uncustomary use in a residential zone, and it'll be a cold day in hell before I allow this.
East Amwell Mayor Kurt Hoffman says the zoning officer was known as a stickler. The township had accidentally removed a line in a local zoning law, allowing homeowners to use alternative energy.
So we did an addendum to the zoning ordinance to allow alternative energy usages. These kinds of things, they have to be publicly noticed. You have to have public hearings. That brought out some people's concern about hydrogen technology and the safety issue.
Hoffman says Stritsky brought in a series of experts to testify that his house was not going to blow up. The hydrogen was being stored at a safe pressure in the same type of tank normally used for propane. Stritsky says he'll probably never make back the $500,000 it cost to build a system, but he hopes to cut the costs by 90% by mass producing and selling solar hydrogen fuel cell systems to other homeowners. He says the future of the planet depends on renewable energy and not fossil fuels that have to be transported halfway across the world.
I mean, at least the fact that I'm using the energy in the same place that I'm creating it, you know, the energy is still zero carbon, and it's still free once you've paid for the equipment.
The Stritskys don't skimp on electricity. They have a big screen TV, a hot tub, and all modern appliances. And Stritsky takes great pride in the fact that he can power everything, including his car, using renewable hydrogen power.
There's no shelf life, and, you know, that's what powers the sun. When the sun stops shining, we're all dead. So this is a much better solution than digging big holes in the ground, throwing sulfur up in the air. This is something that's definitely sustainable. We just have to have the will to do it.
For the Environment Report, I'm Brad Linder.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can learn more about Environment Report stories and subscribe to weekly podcasts at environmentreport.org.
And the forecast for East Central Illinois, patchy fog dissipated this morning, otherwise mostly sunny skies with a high around 52 degrees. Tonight mostly clear with a low of 38, and for tomorrow mostly sunny skies, the high around 55 degrees. Breezy southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. They'll be increasing to 15 to 20 in the afternoon. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, December 13th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.